I'd like to call this Health and Social Services Committee meeting to order. The time is 11:01 a.m., Friday, May 16th. Roll call, please.
Congressman Bickhorst?
Present.
Congresswoman Lemon?
Present.
Congressman Maker?
Here.
Second Speaker Redcorn?
Here.
Chair Hamilton?
Here. We have a quorum. The next item on the agenda is prayer. Congressman Bickhorst, will you do the prayer this morning?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dear Lord Heavenly Father, in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, we come to you in a humble way. Dear Lord Heavenly Father, we're thankful for all of this beautiful weather that you've bestowed upon us. And dear Lord Heavenly Father, we're thankful for all of the moisture that you give us. And dear Lord Heavenly Father, as we continue through the next few days, just ask that you be with all of our Congress people, all of our executive people, and help us work through these budgets, dear Lord Heavenly Father. And ask that you be with our veterans, those that are in harm's way, those that have served, and bless our little children's hearts and minds. Ask all these things in your Son's name, Jesus Christ, amen.
Thank you for that. Next item on the agenda is approval of minutes. We have two sets of minutes dated April 28th and April 24th.
Mr. Chair?
Congresswoman Lemon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page two, on the April 28th minutes, I believe that on motion to cease, it would need to be motions would cease for the position of appropriations representative, not position of chair.
I will get that fixed. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair?
Congresswoman Lemon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Motion to approve the minutes for April 28th as amended.
Second.
We've got a motion made. We have a second. Discussion? Seeing none. All in favor, say yes.
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 All right, minutes from April 28th is approved as amended.
Mr. Chair?
Congresswoman Lemon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Motion to approve the minutes dated April 24th, 2025, as presented.
Second.
A motion made. We got a second. All in favor, say yes.
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 Minutes from April 24th are approved. Next item on the agenda is ONCA 2481, an act to amend the Osage Nation Health Benefit Act at 16 ONC Section 3106 to increase the benefit of members under 65 up to $1,000 and to establish an alternate effective date. Congresswoman Whitehorn, you are the sponsor. You have the floor.
Thank you, Chairman Hamilton. So I'm going to remind you where we are on this bill from our last regular session in the health meeting. An amendment was adopted to 2481. I believe the amendment says throughout the bill, strike $1,000 and insert $750. Inadvertently, that amendment causes some heartburn because we struck the 1,000 that our over 65 members had. And that was unintentional on my part and I think on the committee's part. So I'd like to propose an amendment, page one, line 37, strike 750 and insert 1,000.
Second.
I mean, if I can just, can I discuss?
Yes, we have a motion made by Congressman Whitehorn, second by Congressman Bickhorst.
We have a motion made, second by Congressman Bickhorst. We're in discussion.
And what this does is it returns the elders $1,000 back to $1,000 instead of $750. So that's the only change it does to the bill. It brings everything. Now everything in the rest of the bill still sets at $750 instead of a $1,000 increase. So I just wanted to get everybody on the same page.
Any more discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say yes.
Yes.
Amendment passes. Congressman Whitehorn, do you want to continue?
Yes, thank you. I have that in writing, but I have some more amendments because I want to just discuss about why my heart is to increase this. And I know that it's supported by the executive branch. And I wanted to increase it to 1,000, but I could feel that colleagues here weren't buying that. And to me, the important thing is to get it out the door with an increase to the membership. So I started thinking all kinds of crazy things. And I have a committee substitute here that I'm not going to put forward, but if somebody else likes the idea of this committee substitute, I'll gladly hand it to you. And what my idea was about that is to put a gateway. So for members that had expended, that had a medical need and had expended all of their funds. I talked to Mr. DePoole and Jason this past week, and we devised a plan to put a secondary application for people that had a need of more funds for limited medical reasons, which I have an email here from Mr. DePoole that I'm not going to put it forward, but if somebody wants to, they can. But it would have been for true emergencies, for emergency room visits, x-rays, CT scans, colonoscopies, joint replacement, birth of a child, chemotherapy. So it would limit what they could fill out in a mid-year application to increase to 750. That would be the way they would access that. And then I really did some soul searching this morning. Why are you doing that? Well, I'm doing it because I really believe that some of our members need more medical assistance. From the report sent by Mr. DePoole, he states in here that in 2022, the $500 that we received in not current today, but because I think that when we talked, that amount, he has it that it's $583.20 is how far it'll get you. But I think there's a new figure that he said, and it's over $600 now that the inflation rate on that, your $500 doesn't get you as much as it used to, that it's over $600 now. But I don't have that in a document. Our document says $583.20. I understand there's another additional document out there. So back to my thoughts this morning. So I was just looking at it, and I believe that we do have members that need more help. Not everybody has the opportunity to have good health care like we have here at the Nation. Our employees have wonderful insurance. I'm a benefactor of our wonderful insurance we have. We have a wonderful healthcare system here, but we have members outside of the Nation that probably have need of this money for health situations. So back to this morning, I was trying to figure out, well, why are you struggling around and you're going to make RT Consulting, which they are perfectly willing to do that mid-year application, and they're perfectly willing to set the criteria and have it signed off on by the AG. But to me, the only reason I was doing it was to get it passed through Congress. I really don't believe or feel like our people that need that money should have to go through that secondary application. I believe we set out a criteria in a plan. We followed the publication of the IRS, publication 502, as what's an acceptable medical expense. We did have problems probably 6-7 years ago with the spending being crazy on it, but now we've put guidance in our debit card, and we have a company that really stays on top of it. So I believe our spend on this is totally in line with the IRS guidelines. And to me, to limit that to somebody to have to fill out another application because they had to go have a heart cath and they needed a little bit of money, they needed a their copay for it, they needed, my heart tells me that that's the wrong thing to do to our people, to just trust them with $750 extra that we're going to, that we would appropriate to them. So I am not going to ask you to adopt that committee substitute. If somebody else feels like that they would want to do that, that they feel like it's a need for our people to have a little bit more money on this benefit card, I will gladly hand it to you. It's all worked up, ready to go. But I am just going to stay with how this bill sets right now and ask the committee to pass it out with a due pass recommendation, increasing the benefit to members under 65 to $750 annually. Mr. Frazier helped me with, I did the calculation on it, and just the total spend on that, if everybody enrolled, which our enrollment as of February 2025, for that age group is 14,601 people. And if you just do the straight math on it, that liability would be $3.7 million. Mr. Frazier did some calculation, and his shows that probably the spend on it would probably be 2.6. And that's without, that's just a straight appropriation. This won't go into effect until the 2026 plan year. So, I wanted to be brief about what I had to say about this. I know there's a lot of questions about the demographic of the people we serve and the needs and what they spend it on. But to me, it's a benefit that our nation has decided to give to the people. And as long as they fall under the guidance of what the plan says, that we ought to trust our people to spend it for their needs as their medical issues arise. So that's where I'm at, and I'll relinquish the floor. I yield, and thank you, Chairman and Committee, for hearing me.
Thank you. Congressman Big Horse, you had your hand raised.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Congresswoman Whitehorn, I agree wholeheartedly with you. The thing that worries me is how many seniors do we have that are on Medicaid? Because it looks like that DOGE is going to wipe Medicaid completely out. And then I got to thinking, we have children also that are on Medicaid. And have we thought about looking at those needs? We need to be visiting with our health people about the children that are going to be left without insurance. So I just wanted to bring that up, but I am in support of this, and especially with the DOGE cuts coming, we don't know how many seniors are being subsidized with Medicaid dollars. So that's all I had to say. Thank you.
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
Thank you, Congressman Big Horse. I agree with you. I think that we're facing a world of a lot of unknowns right now, and I think we do need to start having those conversations as we see things happening at the federal level that will affect our people. And like I said earlier, we have a wonderful healthcare system here in Pawhuska, and I'm proud of what we've done here. But the demographics of our membership, there's a lot of people that live outside that are going to be affected by federal cuts and federal dollars. And this would cover the end of the children that might be on Medicaid. This would help them with that small increase. As far as our seniors go, the seniors will stay the same at $1,000 with 2-year rollover. This bill doesn't affect them. But I believe that that's a conversation that we need to have and at another time going forward. So thank you for bringing that up.
Congresswoman Rebhard.
Thank you, Congresswoman Whitehorn. What's the total cost? What would be the amount needed for the appropriation piece of this?
For this, specific to this change, it would be right now enrolled, like I said, we had 14,600 members enrolled as of February of 25 that this would affect. And so I can just go on the numbers that we have right now, but if every one of them used that extra $250, it would be $3.7 million. Like I said, Mr. Frazier came out with a calculation of 2.6 that he thought would probably be the actual spend on that. I don't know how he does that number magic, but I'm glad that we have him and that he does. So that's what I have. That this specific piece of legislation, how that would affect the health benefit fund.
So I'm just curious, with our current balance in our general fund, how we would fund that as it relates to the other appropriation request during this special session.
Is that a question to Mr. Frazier? Mr. Frazier?
It's an effective date. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that the effective date was for next fiscal year. Is that correct?
I do have an amendment I haven't asserted yet that makes the effective date be January 1, 2026.
Congressman Rebhard, are you done?
Well, I'm thinking, you know, with all our direct services and this past year, I see us diversifying what areas we're helping. Definitely food sovereignty is something that we've talked about with the meat packages and things of that nature coming out, that have come out in these last sessions. But I've also big picture, and I think in appropriations, I'm just going to put a little concern out here for this next fiscal year, because we don't know what's going to happen in September with regards to this new administration and the cuts that are coming down, what role we have to play in supplementing any of those cuts in our non-tribal programs. What does this look, what is that reaction going to be? I'm just saying, now, I would better support this if it were going towards the elders to some degree, rather than I would the 65 and under. And that's just my own opinion at this time. But we're also, I'm just going to say right now, we've got the MIFA negotiations going on. We don't know about the employment of our people now at the Bureau. That's on my mind. I think we're going to just see some increases with some of our non-tribal funding. We don't know what that looks like. And I was just wondering, would you consider us not taking any action during this special session and waiting closer to CEJO as we start looking at, number one, we have to fund our government, number one. It's in our Constitution. We have to fund the government. Secondly, I think there could be some cuts in our self-governance. We don't know that for sure. We don't know. That's the problem. Right now, we have the benefit. We have a health benefit to our people currently, right now. And I'm being a little bit cautious. That's all. And Congresswoman Whitehorn, I know you think the same way. I know you do. I'm just wondering, here's where I'm at, guys. I said this last session during HUNCA. I think we're going to have to really prioritize here. I even talked to Congresswoman Goodfox this morning about we've got to look at these properties we have, these projects out here. Where are we? With that comes operational cost, the cost to build. We've got projects that we're finished up that still need work done. I see a pretty big budget coming over. I don't know that we're going to get an increase in gaming dollars. I just don't. I mean, I still have nightmares about Lost Creek sitting out there. I'm just saying we've got a lot of things on our plate, but my goal is what I'm saying is I'm not against it. I'm saying we may have to prioritize. And I'm just, you know, wanting everybody to stay focused on, I'm in CJO already, and I'm concerned. Thank you, Chair.
Congresswoman Goodfox. Then who's that? Rebecca? All right, let's go to Congresswoman Goodfox first, then Rebecca, then Congresswoman Redcorn.
So I don't, as you know, we all have different circles of people that talk to us about what their needs are. I don't disagree that there are, it's a small, we've gotten the numbers. It's a very small percent of people that max out their current $500 in the first quarter. And we're talking a few dozen in the thousands that are enrolled. I don't think that anyone disagrees that there is a small number of people that max out because of very serious health issues, and that $500 is eaten up very quickly. And I think that's what drove you to increase, right? Hearing from those people. I just can't get past the fact that we've got thousands of people enrolled that say, but we don't even use all of the card we have now. We're thankful for it, but we don't use the full 500. Like, we only use 300 or 450. From a fiscal standpoint, I don't see how throwing another 250 for all those thousands of people that don't max it out makes sense. Because we're going to tie that money up. We're the way that this bill is now, we're going to tie that money up. We're going to have to include another, you know, at least 2.6 million. And so I just question that. Like, why would we do that? We're going to tie up another 2.6 million when we know from the data that we have right now that 80% plus people don't max out the $500 that they have now. I don't see the application process mid-year for the people that do max out as like a hoop. I don't look at it any differently as crisis assistance. It's an application. You got to go fill it out, show what your need is. You get approved. Housing has applications for help in their area. So that's how I see it. Is it an extra step? It is. But it also would allow for us to put a little less money in there instead of the 2.6 million. Maybe we start out with 500,000 to see what the need is. That's me thinking through it. I like that we have started. It's interesting that Congresswoman Rivard mentioned diversifying direct assistance, and that's what it is, right? It is. Because I hear from people all the time that say, y'all don't do anything for me. I don't need scholarship money. I don't need the health benefit card. I don't need school clothing assistance. I don't need a storm shelter. I don't, you know, so I feel like it's our job to start thinking about what are other opportunities that we could provide for direct assistance. We've come a long way since the first Congress. I'll say that. School clothing assistance is something that Congresswoman Redcorn brought to us. Congressman Potts brought the storm shelter. Congresswoman Rivard brought the money for landowners. that I consider that a direct service, right? Because, and it doesn't just serve people within the boundary. That serves people that own land here from California or Florida. I challenge this body to start thinking about how to diversify direct assistance a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. I don't know. I kind of feel like we're being a little lazy, just continuing on with burial assistance, scholarship, and health benefit card. Just throw some more money on it. Just throw some more money on it. Because I hear from so many people that say, that's not what I need. Those aren't my needs. So how do we try to provide direct services for all the needs that are eligible, right, per IGRA, that can reach more people and not just a select few? And I think we should really, and we talked about in the last Congress, Congresswoman Stabler mentioned a cafeteria plan, and we said, let's really talk about that. Let's really look at that, because, your needs change as your family changes. There are families that are going to say, well, scholarship serves me right now, but in 4 years, it's not going to serve me. We're thankful for it, but what does that cafeteria plan look like? And I just think that before we venture down that road, so my preference would be for the sign up, and it would be funded, not at 2.6 million. We're not going to throw money to something that we already know 80%+ people don't have the need. That would be my first preference, but my second preference would be for us to seriously look at what does a cafeteria plan look like for people, because I've had people say school clothing assistance first through 12th. Well, I've got a kid in college, and that scholarship money is eaten up with dorm and board and fees and lunch cafeteria plan, and I could use that for my college kid. I mean, and listen, we're not going to make everyone happy all the time, but I do think that as we move forward with things like shelter and school clothing and people's restricted land, we are serving more people in a different way. And I like that, because that for years, the status quo on this Congress has been, we'll just throw some money at the, as I know Congresswoman Revar doesn't have, at the big three, throw a little bit more money on there. Just throw some more money. And we've gone from 3,000 to 5,000 to 8,000 for burial assistance. Every year we have increased scholarship, even by a small amount. But I have people say things to me, I don't know about anyone else, about like, well, what else can you guys do with that money for direct services? Is this it? And I'm like, no, this isn't it. But for us, until recently, it has been it. So that's where I'm at. I'm not on this committee, but I am interested to hear from Treasury. I don't disagree with Congresswoman Revard. If we were to have to fund this right now, we don't have the $2.6 million right now in the bank to do it. We just don't. And I do realize that the Treasury has the ability to look at our funding, what this body's doing and what executive is doing and what we're passing out, and say, we don't have the money this year to do 1,000. We have the money to do 700. That makes me nervous, because I think that when we put it out there, it's expected, but our Treasury has the ability to say, no, ma'am, and no, sir. Congress may have said they want you to have $750 for everyone under the age of 65, but we're here to tell you that we don't have the money after the budgets have come through and everything else. So that makes me nervous, because I think that people would be disappointed. And yeah, that's where I'm at. So I would like to hear from Treasury though. Okay.
Ms. Motala, are you still with us?
Yes. Good afternoon, everybody.
You have the floor.
Thank you. I agree with Jordan's numbers, the 14,000, and you multiply it by 250 and you're getting your 3.6 number. You're going to take a percentage of that of how many people max out, and this is going to be your total cost. That math is correct. But what I am seeing as a whole across the entire fund is there's been an increase in expenditures over the last, let's see what I'm looking at, 4 years without any increase to the amount we are giving to tribal members. So we start out in 22, our total spend is 11.3. We go to 23, our total spend is 12.5. I'm sorry, in 23, it's 13.1. You go into 24, it's 13.3. And right now we're trending ahead. I did just send a Congresswoman Whitehorn a presentation. And I know I spoke about this during HANCA session. I've been watching this fund pretty closely on the expenditure side. And there were a few things that I got back from the PowerPoint. Everything that Mrs. Whitehorn discussed is accurate as far as what the cost of what it cost in 2020, $500 equivalent in today's money in 2020 would have been upwards of $595 to $600. So you're seeing about an 18% decrease in what that amount looks like now in 2025. My hindrance and concern is if we go into, if this gets enacted and we go into fiscal year 2026, and I know there's a lot of talk of the big three, funding that is going to look really difficult as far as the executive outlay looks, especially if the revolving funds are going to be in the executive outlay. Because I agree with also Congresswoman Rivard, you know, my goals and my position is to make sure operations is funded first. And I've communicated that throughout the budget process the past 2 days. Even if you have capital expenditures, please send them to your secretary, because the goal is to fund those operations first. So my hindrance would be on the cost. Without an increase, it's already increasing. And there's several factors that are going into that. In this PowerPoint, they also talk about there's a, I believe it's 47% increase of people aged 65 and older across the United States, which is wonderful, right? You know, your lifespan is increasing. You're seeing more people in the 65 plus age group. That also means that liability is going to increase as well. And to this date, that liability has never been funded. And it makes me nervous. And then if we go back and we look at fiscal year 2025, when the budgets were submitted, there was a lot of money sitting in all of those revolving funds. And when I recommended to decrease the appropriation for fiscal year 2025, I made sure to testify that when we go into fiscal year 2026, the total amount would be requested in fiscal year 2026. So the reduction in that was to make sure that we were able to meet our executive outlay. This year in fiscal year 2026, the total cost of that is going to come down. And so maybe there can be some collaboration between executive and Congress of removing the revolving funds from the executive outlay. Because if this does get enacted, I don't see how I could actually get into that box of $60 million and fund all the operations. I really don't. I know there's a lot of talk, well, executive doesn't spend all the money. We have some retained revenue. Yes, that occurs. But again, agreeing with Congresswoman Rivard as well, we don't know what those cuts look like just yet, especially on the Fed side and the Trump administration and things of that sort. So I just wanted to make sure that there's clarity and transparency there, that there is already an increase into this fund without it increasing. And I'm an Osage mom of five children. I would absolutely love to have the $250 extra on my card. As a tribal member, I love it. But kind of working and seeing what the cost is, I know that's going to be a difficult puzzle to piece together. So I don't want to say, like, you know, I'm not for it or I am for it. these are just the numbers that I'm seeing, that there's going to be an increase in there, and trying to fit that puzzle together will be a little bit more difficult.
Okay, we have a Congresswoman Redcorn, then Congresswoman Lemon, and then.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Ms. Motala. I'm glad you said all the things that you said, and I agree with everything that you said. I agree with Congresswoman Goodfox. I agree with Congresswoman Rivard. And I also, so I'm gonna talk with two hats for a second. First hat's gonna be my congressperson hat, and then I'm gonna talk as a constituent mother hat. The money component of that is my biggest concern, and I think my biggest concern in that isn't the need for an appropriation to meet this new amount. It's what Ms. Motala just talked about. It's that the need for this current $500 limit and the spending on it is increasing. And we have a larger number of people nationally, not just us, but people who are going into that group of 65 and older faster and staying there longer. And that's a liability that currently we can cover, but if you look and do the math, we're probably not gonna be able to cover that full liability in the next couple of years. So we're gonna really need to take a long, hard look at that 65 and over category too, and really talk about how to manage that and manage those funds over these next couple of years. But so my Congress hat considers the long-term budget. I think it would be really easy for us, and I've said this before, and Congresswoman Goodfox said it today too, I think it would be really easy for us to just say, yeah, let's just put $3.7 million over there, right? When we come to do the big budget in the fall, let's just give some more money to that. But there's long-term implications for that. A, if we got to a point where we couldn't fully fund it and the liability was fully there, we'd have to pull that back. That would be disastrous to even have to talk about doing something like that. I don't want to put us in that position. And I'm thinking with that long-term head when I think about the financial impact of that and what that would do to our people when we have to say, I'm sorry, we're going to pull that back. So my fiscal brain and my Congress brain goes there, but my mom brain, hot mess as it might be sometimes, I think about just our current needs over this last couple of weeks in my household, how they've changed and how they're constantly changing and how the expenses are constantly changing and increasing. And so one of the things that I want to talk about, I know not every single household in that 65 and under category is an income earn, has income earning potential. I know that there are caveats to that, but for the most part, the majority of the households in our 65 and under category are income earning households, or can be potentially income earning. So that's a factor to consider. And when that happens, their needs are always changing, whether they have children in the home or grandchildren that they're raising, or maybe they have adult children in the home or no children in the home. It doesn't matter. The utility bills are always changing. Maybe you need an insurance deductible because you've had a situation at your house, or maybe you have two children. I don't have as many children as Ms. Motala, but I can imagine. Now I have a need for my almost 8-year-old to potentially start braces. Like, that wasn't a conversation that I had a month ago, but that's an expense that's come up. Well, now I have another kid that wants to do a golf camp and training. And then I also have Chromebook insurance. And then I also have all these expenses for the next school year that are coming up. And I also have school supplies and clothing assistance that I would like to request. And I need that. But now for $250, you can't get very much because everything is so expensive. I also need school lunch money. I'm in that group. And I know I'm not alone where my kids don't qualify for free and reduced lunches. That's expensive. It's cheaper to make their lunches at home, and I do, but even that is expensive. Groceries are expensive, so we're looking at food stuff. Childcare is expensive when you're looking at summer camp needs or summer needs. We're approaching summer. We have a large group of people across our nation that are entering into high expense seasons when they have to think about childcare and what to do with their kids over the summer while they're still working. And so anyway, that's where my brain goes, that $750 would be nice. Don't get me wrong. At this moment and at the beginning of the year, I would have told you I didn't need that because we didn't use it last year completely. I did. My two children did not. This year, things have changed. I got one kid in braces. Now I got another kid potentially in braces. And mine, I may end up using it. I may not. Our needs are constantly changing. But my point is, that is not what my household needs. And I want us to do the work as a nation, as a Congress, as I want us to figure out how to ask our people what they need. Whether it's, and I've said this before, whether it's data collection on the front end of this healthcare benefit and we ask them, is this truly what you need? How do you use it? So we can see if we can meet that need in a better way. Maybe when we do school clothing assistance, maybe we ask some questions on that application. Maybe when we do crisis assistance, we ask people questions on that application that only gives us data. I'm not talking about qualifying needs for those assistances, but we've got to do some data collection on our end so that we can do this work well. I kind of equate this to like if my kid comes to me when they're an adult and they need some money because that's just the way life works sometimes, and they need help with bills, like because life is getting heavy and they just can't cover everything. If they come to me and say, hey, mom, can you help me out this month? I need $500 to help with bills and expenses. If I don't ask them what their needs actually look like what is that going to go towards? Can I help alleviate something somewhere else so that you can spend that money and it do the most good for you? Or if I'm just like, yeah, I'll just go get you a Walmart gift card. And I hand that to them and they're like, but I needed to pay my electric bill. That's not going to help me. Thank you. So they've got $500 of my money, but it isn't going to do them the most good. And I really want us to get to a place where we are doing the most good with the dollars that we serve our people with. And I will always be an advocate for increasing direct services, but I want to make sure it's helpful. If my child comes to me and says, I have paid all of my bills, but I need grocery money, okay, well then that $500 gift card is super helpful. But if they have food stamps or they have other means to get groceries and they need money to pay their bills and I give them something that isn't helpful towards what they actually need, then I haven't actually helped them. And so that's, I can't get to a place where I can support this in it for that reason. And that's not that it isn't a good thing, because it is. And wanting to give a bigger benefit to our people is a good thing, but I just don't know that it's the best way that we can do the most good.
Are you finished? Congresswoman Lemon, thank you. You had your hand raised.
I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And good morning, everyone. Just a little bit longer for the morning. Congresswoman Whitehorn, I commend you for your passion and belief in this and the feelings that you have toward it. And I don't think I've said it before, everyone sitting here wants to be able to do more. And this is the avenue that you want to do more in. Being a healthcare advocate, I would say yes, let's do this. But also being a case manager who is data driven makes me pull back. And there's a reason why. I think we have some barriers. And your committee substitute is an answer to some of those barriers, actually. And I don't think that asking someone to fill out a fairly simple application, because they could streamline it, for $250 more dollars is asking very much when it is such a small percentage, because we would get our numbers then. We would totally get our data, and we would meet a need for people that are utilizing the entire amount. So I think your thought process on the committee substitute with the application process, here's the thing, what I have to say to people when they call me, constituents call me. They told me I couldn't do this because I didn't get this filled out or that. I can't go be a nurse without a CPR training, no matter how many times I've had it. And you know what I tell people? They've changed CPR since when I very first started doing CPR. So that makes sense as to why I would need to do that. I can't get a job in certain areas because I might not be ACLS certified, PALS certified, all because of these things. And when you talk to people about this, it's money that you get to have, but the cost to you is your time and application. It's not necessarily free, right? So to me, in the world that we live in now, because everybody wants that instant gratification and doesn't want to have to give justification or why should I have to? These right here have changed us. Social media, the phones, all it's changed us. So I understand 100% and I feel where you're coming from. I do. But 11.3 million, 12.5 million, 13.1 million, 13.3 million, and we're trending up. 4 million for Congresswoman Goodfox's. A lot easier pill to swallow, of course, right? For her food sovereignty initiative with getting food to people. I personally have had to rebudget. I've almost had to rebudget every single month because the cost of food, electricity, utilities, I mean, feed for our animals, if we, you know, so seed that we had to purchase, all those things. So I think that this conversation we better had in CJO when we have all of the information that we hopefully are going to get from the U.S. administration that is so chaotic, and they do it on purpose. They do it on purpose because they do it to scare us, to keep us worried and in a flurry, and we Indians are. We're scared, and they're using fear-mongering against us right now, and the best thing I feel that we can do is pull back, put our heads together, pump the brakes, look at the whole picture, and hopefully we can maybe look at even giving it a small increase in CJO, maybe not 250, or maybe use your committee substitute if we all have more time to discuss about an extra application, in the sense of you would totally grab the data that you need. You would have it. You would know exactly how many people, and then you could forecast for trending up at a percentage, right? There's probably a math equation for that I don't do the math, so. So, I am very leery of making a change. Granted, it's not till 2026, and granted also, and you could debate this, Congresswoman Whitehorn, that in CJO, you could come back and amend it. If we list get it out of committee and we vote on it and it passes, you could still amend it because there's not an effective date until 2026. That's another option. But I have a feeling that this body is not ready to go there yet with all the uncertainty with the U.S. administration. And where we are going to land in that, and what's that going to look like for us. And people aren't going to like to hear this either. And it's not just here. It's people out there listening in, and it gets out on Facebook. It's not going to be easy to say either. Switzerland doesn't pay for people in the U.S. in any way, shape, or form. We talk about our boundaries. And never before have I felt like I would never leave these boundaries. Before, I couldn't wait to get out at times, you know, but with what's going on in the U.S. world right now and in the U.S., you know, administration and all across the U.S., I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. When I talked about Switzerland, maybe I shouldn't use them. Let's use somebody else. Let's use Canada. They're not going to give a Canadian who's living here in the U.S. something that's for people that live in Canada. If we can look at it like that, nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to say, people are like, well, you can't come back here because there's no job. You can't come back here because there's no place to live. I can't. There are things that do, there are barriers, but never before have I felt like some people are going to have to come home, and we're going to have to focus on a more narrow window that's going to be a hard decision to make in this hall right here and in your new building when you guys are in your new building. I'm not ready to go there with this yet because of so much uncertainty. And I don't want it to, if it goes out of committee, I'll vote no. I don't want to do that, Congresswoman Whitehorn. I want the data. I could vote for it to go out of committee, possibly, if we actually had that application, the extra application process in there to know what we need. Instead of putting 3.6 We served on here when we didn't even fund it fully, and we still haven't funded it fully, and it's been something on our back, and then we would be doing it, we would be doing more, where it would, I don't know, I just can't go there today. I appreciate your passion, I really do, and we are definitely to the point in our lives as a nation that we talk about, this is a need. We have some tools to get that information. Our scholarship application, you could ask them to answer 5 or 6 questions or a 10 question. I need you to answer these 10 questions as part of the application. School clothes, crisis assistance, the grocery assistance. We could ask it on all those platforms and really gather some information and data to where we could stand up at that podium and say, we actually have data here that proves that this is a need for this particular secular part of our population. And that, to me, breaks down barriers, and it's the best spent money, the absolute best spent money. So I wish we could do it. I wish we had the money in Treasury right now to do it, and you could make it effective now. I just can't get behind, and my gut tells me I can't do it. I just can't. My heart can't do it. My mind can't do it. Thank you.
Okay, the time is 11:53. We've had a lot of discussion on this. Congresswoman Whitehorn as the sponsor, do you have anything else to add? I'd like to just make a comment. Let's keep it brief.
I will. I'm going to try to do a roundy round about all of this. So, what I've heard everybody say, including Ms. Motella, is the reason this is increasing is because people are using it. They're utilizing it. It is a need. And to me, that's the best data we have. We have the data here right in front of us. We have Treasury telling us people are utilizing this. Inflation's going up. Our people have medical needs that they're using it on. And it's going up. This is a program that serves 15,700 people, and that's just the people that are on health benefit. That's our people there. That's the number of people this serves, and they're utilizing it because it does go up. If we do have to put extra money in the Treasury, that money goes into the health benefit fund. It doesn't go away. It doesn't get spent on anything else but our people's in this nation's their health and health needs, including the supplement. So to me, it's money put away and safeguarded, well safeguarded. Congresswoman Rivard, I filed this bill SHEZO session of last year, and I've wanted to work with everybody on it, and I feel like I've done that. But the fact is if we hold this off till SHEZO session, then the planning that the executive needs to do to submit that budget to incorporate, the chief would have liked me to stay at 1,000. In fact, he got aggravated with me that I decreased it. But that's beside the point. But to me, they're going to have to do that work over in the executive office to figure out how to continue this benefit to our people at this amount when they submit their budgets. Because as I see it right now, that is in part of their big, in the big tribally funded budget. So that is something that they're going to have to come down with the outlay, and it is the executive branch that does that. So I can put this committee substitute in that gives that gateway. If that's what it's going to take, like I said, my thoughts were, is I'm doing this for my colleagues that have an issue with this benefit, increasing it. Do I agree we need to serve different needs of our people? We do. We do. And I agree food sovereignty is important, and I support that. But to me, we're going to have to do the work and find that dollar amount, too, when it comes down to SHEZO appropriations. We're going to have to do the hard work here. I support money trickling down on our people. Do I know that our Constitution says that we fund our operations for this government and we are required to do that? Yes, we do. But we also serve our people as well, and we can do it both ways. It's just going to take hard work to figure out how to stretch our dollar, and we are in an unknown period, but we usually operate that way. We do. We operate on projections. So one more thing I want to say is we handled this fund for years when it had that rollover, and I am glad you guys, when I wasn't here, I'm glad you guys changed it to an annual distribution, because it's easier to see, it's easier to track, and it's easier to finance. I support that you guys did that. This increase will be an annual increase. So to me, we're in a special session. I feel like I've done the work on it. I've been asked to prolong it, to please push it back, and I have. But I think it's just really time to vote on it. I'm 100% happy with anybody to ask to adopt this committee substitute. Exactly what it does is it resets it to $500, and then there's an additional clause that reads, an additional limited benefit for each eligible member of the Osage Nation under 65 years up. An additional benefit under the age of 65 up to 250 may be applied by a separate application during each plan year, limited to medically necessary treatments as determined by the third-party administrator and the approved plan. That's the big change. It does give you the 250, but it does it with an application process. And anybody that wants to take this committee substitute, move to insert it, I am willing to do that. I just, like I said, in my thoughts this morning, I couldn't see making the people do that. But if you want to do that and you want the data, here it is. And I'm serious. I have no qualms with anybody moving to adopt it. So, and that's all the change it does, is it puts that $250 gateway in there that you have to apply for it. So I would prefer this to get out of committee, however you have to send it out. I'm fine. I'm not finished working on it. If it takes another Congress to do it, I'm willing to sit back and wait, because I do believe that we see a need of over 15,000 people of our people that utilize this. And I see the cost and the utilization of the plan going up with inflation. So that's where I stand on it. I don't want you guys to feel like I'm being obstinate. I'm not. I think that we have a lot of hard work to do budgeting FY26. So thank you. I yield.
Did you want to make a motion to do that committee substitute?
Does a committee want this committee substitute?
If you want to make the motion.
Okay, we'll see. I move to adopt committee substitute. It's not stamped. Does it need to be stamped before?
All right, while they're discussing that, Congresswoman.
Well, I'm just going to go back to the simple fact, guys. I don't know that we have the money. Whether it leaves committee or not, we can't exceed projected revenue.
This committee substitute.
And so with that, I just want to say, number one, I want to feel comfortable as the appropriations chair that we're not overextending ourselves. And I know that there's an effective date.
Mm-hmm.
But if executive is so proactive in this, why didn't they submit this during CJO themselves? When they sent down their request, they didn't do that. They did not send down an increase. I'll be quick. I know you're wanting brief comment, but as we're preparing for this, I just want to make sure that we've got the money available. But we've tried in two attempts within this government, we try to access data through the strategic plan, which we know was just finishing up, and also through our census. These are the two tools that we use to acquire data to make decisions. And I think we're getting better at it. Here's the deal. If you guys know, in our Constitution, there's nowhere that says we offer direct services. Nowhere. Our job is to provide a government operational budget, an annual budget to operate this government. When the direct services came in to serve our people, I think that was wonderful, and that started with crisis. I don't like the word big three. It irks me because we do so much more. And I'm going to just read off what we do just so that you all feel better that you do more than three things, because I think we're stuck there. We do burial assistance. We have direct services in Deposca for our children. We have career tech. We do certification and licensure. We do college entrance programs. We do Sylvan. We do tutoring. We do school clothes. We do STEAM. We provide STOLs. We do the STAR scholarship. We do youth employment. We provide crisis. We do a health benefit. We do a scholarship, more than one. We have housing, rehab, rent, Indian child welfare. We do fencing. We do noxious weeds, ponds, surveys, the regional gathering fund, critical road access, social services. We provide direct services through our WELA programs. We do more direct services through Wildland Fire now. We provide 477 career training, child care development, CWAS UPI that allows our children that have income barriers to be involved in ballet, as an example. We have farmers market. We do Indian child welfare direct services, JOM. We do electricity needs. We do housing. We do WIC. That's more than three. More than three. There's not one subject matter that we can't supplement appropriations to. It just depends on what this congressperson may feel like they need. We get calls from constituents. It's not based off of, when we do a fiscal analysis, it's not based off of the need of the people. It's based off of money and what we have available. Remember that. Our fiscal analysis may be what needs to change, is how we analyze who and how we're serving. But that's just something I want us to be aware of. We do a lot more than the big three, and we have for years. But a lot of, you're right, these revolving funds are established here, created here and established in our treasury. And we have included them as part of the annual budget because that's just the way this government has set it up. But to prioritize, we have to fund the government first. But yes, those direct services have to be part of the outlay of the executive branch, because we don't do that, neither does judicial. So it has to be in their budget, in their outlay. So there has to be a fine line between how we operate properly and how we serve properly our people, because it is hard to give and then take back, that's for sure. So I just want to make that comment. I want to make sure that we have the money available to even proceed. Because if you notice, we've done a lot of effective dates. We've actually addressed effective dates to make sure that things get funded into TSEJO. And that's just part of planning. That's good. Thank you.
Congressman Whitehorn, are you planning to make a motion for the committee to adopt a committee substitute? And if you are, can we have copies of that committee substitute?
Absolutely.
All right, this chair would call for a quick recess.
Okay.
To get that done.